All right, welcome everyone to our CLL committee meeting. Make some announcements before we start. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Service Section boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meetings to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when asked the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature on Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. For public that's attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to Ms. King to help expedite the public comments section. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comment. I'll then ask for questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint shared at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. At this point, all committee members are present aside from Director Beth Bronstein. We will start with item one, Pledge of Allegiance. President Martin, if you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Please stand, take the flag, put your hand over your heart, and follow me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, President Martin. You can be seated. Now, at this time, we're going to item two, public comment. We do have a public comment from Ms. Cam Noltemeyer. Ms. Noltemeyer, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, speak to you. I just want to give you all the reminder that next month we will have a new water agency. You're all aware of that, I'm sure. And we're really looking forward to it. And this one is different and was formed in a different manner. And I have that all documented. But I think it would be very good for our community, for the public to be able to actually elect the people that represent them. We've never had that opportunity with this water company. And it's just something that we're very happy to see happening. I hope it all goes smoothly and there aren't any big demonstrations or anything against it. Because he did it the right way. It was sitting there for many years. And it came just after he died. So I kind of picked up on it then and made sure it kept moving, and it did. So you know that's what you're up against. And I hope it will go smoothly without too many niches that we have to go to court on.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. And for the record, every director on this committee has been elected. And just a housekeeping item here, Director Beth Bronstein has joined us. Director Kelly, go ahead.
Yeah, just a clarification. There is no new water agency. There may or may not be new directors based on the elections on November 8th. And even those directors will not take office until January. So everything will be status quo, but just wanted to make sure nobody's confused that we're talking a new water agency. We are not. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Kelly. All directors are in attendance. We're going to move to item 3.1, legislative consultant report presented by Mr. Jeff Bowman from ESA. Bowman, go ahead.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight. So right now, D.C. is it kind of slowed down a little bit. Members and senators are right now their home running for re-election. The executive.
For a minute. Can we have a volume control?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can definitely hear Jeff.
So
we're getting the volume straight, Jeff. Yeah. A second.
Can you say test 3 times?
Test, test, test.
Okay, that's good. Okay, please go ahead.
Okay, it's right now it's kind of slowed down in Washington, D.C. Members and senators are home running for re-election. The executive branch decision makers are touring the country discussing and promoting the achievements of the Biden administration. There's only 2 items that right now remain unresolved by this Congress and SCB Water. We're in the middle of both. The first is the continuing resolution after a very short sprint in September. There was a continuing resolution that was passed that'll fund the federal government through December the 16th. That keeps us alive with our earmark request for Bouquet Canyon and Arundo removal. Again, the CR expires on December the 16th. We have a very uncertain future beyond that. Congress may need another CR, which will push things off until the 118th Congress is in session. The longer this drags, I think the more vulnerable the thousands of earmarks become, particularly if the next Congress decides to do a year-long continuing resolution. The unfortunate part of continuing resolutions is they do not contain earmarks, but we still remain optimistic that Congress will get to a deal before the end of the calendar year, maybe before the holidays, on FY 2023 funding package, and hopefully our earmarks will be a part of that final package. The second part that we are engaged in is the National Defense Authorization Act. So most folks would ask, well, why do we as a water agency care about the National Defense Authorization Act? Well, last week, Chairman Reed of the Senate Armed Services Committee allowed an amendment to be filed to his bill. This was the Water Resources Development Act of 2022, the law that provides for the projects and programs of the Army Corps of Engineers. This was filed as an amendment to NDAA. This is placeholder text right now because staff in the House and the Senate, they are completing negotiations on a compromise package. We have 2 things in the bills that we care about. We have an environmental infrastructure provision in both the House and Senate bill for Los Angeles County. We prefer the House version because the House version lists Santa Clarita Valley Water as an eligible non-federal project sponsor. And then also importantly, in the Senate bill, we have a provision to authorize the Corps of Engineers to help with technical assistance for VOC contamination in the Santa Clarita Valley. So it's nice to have, you know, several irons in the fire this late in the congressional session. So Congress will get back to D.C. the week of November the 14th. Then they're out of session again for a couple of weeks until November the 28th to get through Thanksgiving. There's not a lot of time to complete these 2 must-pass bills. It's going to make for difficult work, especially since you're probably going to have a large slate of retiring members of Congress. But by that point, it's what they call a lame duck Congress. But we're fairly optimistic, you know, that we'll get these bills across the finish line, and SCV Water will have their priorities addressed through this process. And my last note of the evening is next week there is a webinar being sponsored by Congressman Mike Garcia and the United States Department of Transportation. It's really nice to see that infrastructure remains a bipartisan issue in Washington, D.C. and outside the Beltway. Not only will the congressman be participating, but members from the Biden administration will be participating. Charles Small, who's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Transportation, he'll be participating in the event. You know, for us, the reason why it's important, you know, there's a lot of things that the Department of Transportation does, some of which does actually directly impact Santa Clarita Valley Water in terms of your fleeting. So we're going to be participating in that next week. It's an opportunity to learn more about DOT programs, funding opportunities, and sometimes some best practices for grant applications, not just at DOT, but federal family-wide. And that webinar is Monday, October 24th, noon Pacific time. And with that, I'll close and happy to answer any questions that you guys have for me tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Are there any questions from the public?
There's none.
None? Okay, directors, questions, comments? Okay. I have a few questions on your report. For the EPA announces climate change implementation plans, there's a statement for prioritizing nature-based solutions. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What exactly is that?
So nature-based solutions is it, so when, maybe I'll say it this way. So I'm older than 50, so I'm very familiar with what we call gray infrastructure. I think what the administration is trying to do is they're trying to move into a direction of green infrastructure. So when I think of nature-based solutions, I think about it in it like from a, let's think about it from a flood damage reduction standpoint. Instead of building a levee or instead of building a dam, what if you did more control further upstream by purchasing property which you could allow, you know, more excess water to run off? That way you didn't have to build the downstream levee or the downstream dam. So I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to push away from gray infrastructure, Director Orzechowski, into, you know, more wetlands restoration, I think that's what they consider to be more resilient. I think there remain some questions in terms of what the long-term operation and maintenance will be on those. I mean, I think everybody understands sort of long-term operation maintenance costs for gray infrastructure, but I think that's where they're going is, you know, letting the ecosystem itself sort of provide the benefits. That way you don't have to construct something, or if you do, it's something that doesn't create it, you know, otherwise negative impacts that perhaps you didn't foresee when you constructed the project.
Okay, understood. And regarding EPA announcement of Office of Environmental Justice, will this office provide any funds to cover our legal expenses for PFAS contamination? Is that a possibility?
I don't think that's likely.
Okay. And then legislation introduced to stop the Delta Tunnels project. So Congressman Harder and Congressman Garamendi, did they have a lot of influence with their in Congress in regards to the stopping the Delta Tunnel? Do they have a large lobbying group behind them, or is this just something that we see almost every congressional cycle?
We see a lot of bills like this, Director Orzechowski, where members will demand that an agency issue a permit, or they will demand that an agency deny a permit. It is rare that Congress will step in and take that sort of action. Typically, they leave it up to the expertise of those in the executive branch to adjudicate those permit decisions. So I don't know that this bill has an immediate future. I think, you know, with Congress trying to wrap up with the two must-pass pieces of legislation, I think it's going to have bills like this, even in a normal circumstance, are very hard to get across the finish line. In fact, I can't remember in my 15-year career at the committee, I don't think we ever enacted legislation that overruled an agency action on a permit.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Again, any questions, comments? Further Martin.
Thank you, Chair Orzechowski. Back to the climate change implementation plan, Jeff. In your paragraph, I have not clicked on the link to read the whole plan, so pardon me if there's something in my question that's already explained there, but the 2021 Climate Adaptation Action Plan to assist communities in managing the impacts of climate change. And then the very next sentence is the plan outlines detailed actions the EPA will take. So are they assisting communities, or are they taking action? They plan to take action independent of what the community is doing?
I think it's a combination of the two. It is similar to, and that's sort of how EPA is organized. You've got half of the House that is responsible for, you know, providing the federal backstop for things like the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act. And then they also, the other side of the EPA House, that they provide grants or assistance to help communities and entities meet those regulatory requirements.
Would the answer be contained? Well, I appreciate your response, your answer, but it's a combination of the two. But if I were to look into the actual plan itself, might the answer be self-evident there?
It should be. I tell you what, instead of you doing it, why don't I do it? And I'll get you some more granularity on your question.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, President Martin. Any other questions, comments?
I just wanted to thank you for the, it was actually a really good report, and I actually did click on those.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm halfway through. I didn't get all the way through of them.
I was trying to do it here, but I didn't get any response. Yeah.
But so I really appreciate the links and everything. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Very bored. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to item 3.2, legislative consultant report from California Advocates. Oh. Dennis, Anthony, go ahead.
Good evening. How are you? Also, we have Anna Leon. I think we introduced her last week as well. So she's been working on the team for you as well. So since our last update, the legislative signing period for the governor completely ended, and he finished up with a 16.5% veto percentage, which is a little bit higher than last year, but fairly consistent with how Governor Brown did and how he's done. Probably a little higher because he is concerned about the budgetary state of the condition of the state. And, finance earlier this week just released their budget projections and, based on income. And in the first four months of the year, they're down $7 billion from what the projections on income were. So that's fairly significant, but nothing I don't think is surprising because as the we predicted, and that's probably again why his veto percentage was a little higher, is he started to really be a little bit more fiscally prudent and concerned about expenses that were not in line with the budget and anything above the budget. And so that's where he put some time and focus, and that was the end of the signing session. The bills are outlined there, and I think most of the bills we discussed last month, which is like the 2449, those issues with 2142 on turf, those had already been acted upon. And so, it's just a reminder there in what's happening. We do have, the governor did also make a declaration this week as well on state of emergency. He will end the state of emergency on February 28th, 2023. And I think that is pertinent because the new law 2449 addresses how to handle public meetings after that point. So I'd like to kick it to Anthony as kind of our on-staff expert in this. And he can, articulate more on the state of emergency and COVID and public meetings.
Hi, good evening, everybody. It's nice to see you guys again this month. So yes, as Dennis just mentioned and highlighted, the COVID state of emergency has been declared that it's going to come to an end. The governor has chosen the date of February 28th of 2023. In selecting that date, he chose it really to allow healthcare providers to have additional flexibility to continue to do what they're doing if there's a potential surge in COVID infections in the winter months, December, January, February. That being said, he also has made an agreement and a commitment to folks that he's going to push two pieces of legislation early next year. They may be in one bill. They could be in separate bills. It just depends on how they plan to roll them out. But what they want to continue to do is allow nurses to continue ordering and dispensing COVID drugs. And one of the examples that they provided to the public was drugs like Paxlovid. And then finally, they also want to ensure the lab workers that they've been doing previously can continue to process COVID tests. So those are two significant policies the governor wants to ensure remain in place once the state of emergency is lifted. That being said, the lobbyist who was the sponsor of AB 2449 from Three Valleys Municipal Water District provided a very detailed summary, which I've shared with Matt, Steve, Kathy. They can pass it around essentially on the bill, which gives a good synopsis and summary of when the bill takes effect of January 1, 2023. And once the state of emergency is lifted on the 28th, how the actual bill can be used in place. One thing to note for folks is that the bill is still optional. You are able to use the original Brown Act rules if you would like to. This simply just provides an additional method of how teleconferencing and local agencies can continue to operate should they choose to do so under a just emergency, I believe is how it's phrased and titled, or just cause and emergency circumstances, the two separate individual circumstances. So with that, again, just to give a brief recap for 2449, it allows teleconference locations. It doesn't make folks post notification agendas to people's specific locations of where they will be if they're participating remotely. It does make sure that the public does have the option to participate in these meetings. And then also you have to be located within the jurisdiction of the local body that's going to be taking place in the meeting going forward. Finally, there also does still remain the tight guardrails where a quorum will need to be present in person when a meeting is taking place. So again, with that, there's a great summary of how it will be implemented, how it will go and be used moving forward after February 28th, 2023. And I'm happy to take any questions at the end of this on that. Thank you.
I apologize. My camera keeps freezing. So I'm here, but I went off the video so we can use less bandwidth. But another issue that came up last time and we followed up on, and I just wanted to give a quick analysis, is there was the bill on indoor 1157 indoor limits on water use and standards and requirements. And there was a question asked, what's the difference? How do you determine between internal and external water use at this point? Because it's all one meter. Well, that was an interesting conversation with DWR. So I followed up with their legislative folks and their engineers. And they've done a lot of studying on outdoor use, evapotranspiration. They have some draft items that show, you know, how much by lot size and some uses, how much should be used externally. And then they will aggregate that data and then, remove that from what the district should have. And then that would leave the rest as, you know, indoor and specific to that meter. So it'd be indoor, and then they'll extrapolate and kind of a calculated amount that will attribute to outdoor use and then work backwards. As it gets more sophisticated, and again, this is it's an evolving science. They were moving in that direction, and they will continue to do these surveys and evapotranspiration elements. And if you have a pool and all these kinds of elements there that go into their kind of their algorithm, and then that would attribute X to outdoor use, and the rest would be attributed to indoor use. So essentially, it is really a calculation. They expect to get there over time, further refine it, and it's really not a precise science at this point, and they admit that, but that's how they're planning on doing it. And again, there's not a significant amount of penalties of those things at this point. It'll evolve over time. And they'll, you know, cooperatively work with the water community and the non-government organizations to further refine those calculations. a couple other things that are coming up. Next week is the very first meeting for the Government Affairs Committee, and I sit on that representing Santa Clarita. And the Legislative Committee at Aqua will take up their first bills that they are considering to sponsor, or that member agencies have advanced to sponsor. We have not received any of that information yet, but as soon as I do, I'll send it to Steve and Kathy and go through that, see, you know, what would be appropriate for Aqua to engage in, and, you know, and we would advance that forward. But again, that's just kind of the process of starting all over again. And we are heading into the new year and, you know, new bills and new legislative session. So if there are things that are of interest to Santa Clarita beyond what are being proposed by other member agencies, then we may want to, you know, start that process in getting it to Aqua for their consideration. But and then there will be the other things we're doing is meeting and going through, you know, the budget and looking for opportunities for grants and, you know, commitments for funding our various priorities from Arunda to PFAS to, you know, infrastructure, Bouquet Creek, those kinds of things. And so we've had a little communication with staff on that, and we'll continue on those endeavors. With that, are there any questions?
Thank you. Before we take questions, are there any questions, comments from the public?
There is none.
President Directors, any questions, comments? Edward Department.
So I know that the governor vetoed the Dodd bill. Do you think Senator Dodd is thinking of bringing it back or finding a funding source? Is anybody looking at that still?
Yes, and in fact, I've sent a note to Les Spahn, who's the governor who staffed that for Senator Dodd, and asked him. I've not heard back yet, but you know, looking at the biggest issue the whole time was, is there's not really a dedicated funding source, and how do we identify a funding source? And that's what his veto message identified. So I will let, you know, staff know when I hear back from Les, we can forward that forward. But my, you know, assumption is that this will continue to be a conversation, both legislative and budget driven, over the next few years.
Dr. Bosky.
This is, I think, for Anthony. First of all, thank you. This was very, very detailed, and I loved the report. It was a great read. But I thought I understood AB 2449. And then you said, so I don't know if I just misheard you now, but does it mean that the people that are teleconferencing or participating remotely need to be the agency area?
Yes, they need to be within the respective boundaries, is my read from the detailed summary that was provided today, when they participate.
Okay, so that means that this isn't for someone to participate from outside the boundaries of the agency. It's for someone that's still in the boundary of the agencies and just isn't going to be able to show up.
That is correct.
Thank you.
And Director Bronstein, we'll send around, I just sent it to you, the summary that Anthony mentioned, so that the committee has it. It was nicely done. I think, you know, the initial bill was much broader, and it just got squeezed down. And frankly, I don't think it provides much of any real additional thing other than maybe some flexibility on posting requirements and you know, the ability for people to attend where that director is potentially participating from. So we'll send around that summary. I think you'll enjoy the read.
Thank you. Yeah, because I thought it was in general. Now, as you said, it got cut down. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it became very specific. So how we operate right now, aside from being out of the agency's district, we're in compliance, right? Okay. Good to know. Any questions, comments, directors? All right. I do have a few questions for you guys. Regarding SB 1020, how will that affect, will that, maybe that's a question from Mr. Cole, how will that affect our fleet of vehicles? SB 1020 is the Clean Energy Jobs and Forward We Act. The bill establishes interim targets for statewide 100% clean energy policy. The bill requires state agencies to accelerate their 100% clean energy policy goal by 10 years. Does that include our fleet of vehicles, or is that just an overall carbon emission, greenhouse gases emissions?
So, yeah, I'm glad to answer that. The bill is really focused on electricity, and it does essentially two things. And there is an element of the State Water Project and us being contractors that was very concerned about this, but they were worked through. But it accelerates the requirement on state entities. So, you know, UC prisons, state office buildings to use, and including DWR, to use 100% zero emissions energy. Now, that's a little different than renewable. A lot of people talk about this bill saying renewable. Renewable is a term of art, and there are things like hydro that are eliminated out of that, and nuclear as well. But however, those energy production methods, the technologies, are zero emission or have been classified as zero emission. So they are included in this. So again, when people talk about it, it's important to say zero emissions versus renewable. So 1020 accelerates that for state entities to 2035, and then accelerates that by 2035, you have to have that the load entities, which include the IOUs, investor-owned utilities, as well as munis, have to be at 90% clean energy by 2035, 95 by 2040, and 100% by 2042. And so they accelerated that because it used to be 100% 2045, and built a ladder, kind of a step up ladder as it goes. So those two things are what 1020 does with clean electricity. And the concern of state water contractors was stranded assets, that there are some contracts that are like gas fired contracts. It's things that they have that go longer than that. And they've got a provision in there on how they assess that, and so that there's no stranded assets. And there's also a commitment to try to find funding to pay off any additional increases in rates. And so the state water contractors went neutral at the end on that bill because of the way they manage stranded assets and address some of the rate issues.
Okay, so sounds to me like this is a Southern California Edison problem, not our problem. But what about non-portable generators? Are they affected by this? Gas-powered non-portable generators?
No, but there are plenty. You mentioned the fleet. So I'll answer both those questions. So there is a different rule about fleets, and there's a different rule about generators. And generators are more strictly regulated in the South Coast Air Quality Management District as a stationary source of emissions than, say, they are in the Bay Area, which doesn't have as tight a rules on those. And so those your generators are, I'd say the strictest rules on your generators are typically South Coast Air Quality District requirements. And there was a whole legislative proposal about 4 or 5 years ago that went through and trying to reclassify backup generators for entities like water districts and hospitals. And there was some flexibility there. But again, the most strict rules for Santa Clarita is the Air Quality District, not necessarily state law.
Okay, understood. And regarding SB 1157, it did pass, and you gave us a good brief here.
Yeah.
So in your conversations, any mentions on using AMI data to help with that assessment of how much water is being used inside as opposed to out in the lawns?
I'm going to have to claim ignorance. AMI, what's that acronym?
I can take that one, David. Okay. So not AI, but AMI is automated meter infrastructure. So basically the smart meter infrastructure. Sure. So to directly answer your question, I think that technology does provide the ability to look at sometimes the way, you know, water is used differently. You can get a lot more granularity of data set of when you basically can tell when the sprinklers turn on.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it in person, and that's a good starting point. But based on the report, DWR is doing this work, and in your conversations with them, no one brought that up. Automated meters, real-time data from ratepayers, customers, residential areas.
Dennis? And not specifically, but there are tools and technologies that we discussed that they're using to collect general data geographically, because obviously there's different evapotranspirations and things in say Santa Clarita than there is in Fresno or Crescent City. So there will be, you know, data recalculated geographically. And then even I think we talked about last time, things like if an entity has evaporative cooling, and there's some communities that a lot of, you know, entities have been built out that way. So they'll be taking in local measures and local geographic issues. And then, like I said, even there, if there's a pool or not, those kinds of things would all be going into the calculation at that point. And they admitted, so we talked through this a couple of times, and you know, we know the people well, and they admitted that this is an evolving science. And as, you know, we get closer to 2030 and 2035 and some of the dates, that they will, be refining that with input from water professionals, the districts, nonprofits, those kinds of things.
So the agency will have to report those numbers to DWR. And are we going to be enforcing this?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe if we go into this just a little bit more, and we can talk about it more at another time specifically too. But this is really the new set of urban water use objectives, right, are outdoor indoor use. So it's water budgeting. So it's not necessarily a new technology. What Dennis is pointing out is this discrepancy between knowing how much somebody's using indoor versus outdoor. And it's, frankly, it's, I would call it a calculated guess, right? And so you make assumptions. You can do some study, you can try and refine those, but at the end of the day, unless you're going to put another meter on, you're not going to know exactly what goes indoor and exactly what goes outdoor. But I think as our agency, you look at kind of the legacies of how some of the legacy agencies were doing water budgets. So the New Ball County area had what were called water targets, their water budgets, where it actually took mapping and looked at the outdoor, like Dennis was mentioning, kind of the landscape area, actually calculated the trees and the lawns and assigned water use factors to that. Same with indoor use. There was a calculated methodology about, for a typical household, 3.3 people in it, using X gallons per person per day, that gave you an allotment for indoor. And so this methodology is that. That's what the state's going to. And so, yes, I think as a water agency, we are going to be held to a standard that looks at it from that lens. And to that end, we are advancing the capabilities as an agency now to have water budget technology for every unit in the valley. So that's a current process that we are starting to kick off now so that we have that capability throughout the valley. Because we can see it coming. That's how we're going to have to report. That's how we're going to have to measure. And ultimately, that's where the potential of fairness comes in to your customers and how you treat them and hold kind of each account, you know, accountable for their water use. And you do that through rates, ultimately, on those budgets. And so that's a discussion that's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen maybe even a year from now, but it is going to happen because there's not many proven tools to achieve these levels of conservation that are going to be required of water agencies other than starting to use those types of price signals and other things to move forward with. So there's a lot more to come on that from a policy perspective that you all are going to be thinking about and being given information for.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a heavily contested policy in terms of tiers. Okay, thank you. Regarding SB 1084, again, thank you for your summary. This has been dropped, vetoed by the governor. Is there any push to have something like that for the next year, or is this something that has to go through U.S. Congress?
Well, there are some issues with foreign commerce and some of those areas, but the United States Department of Agriculture, in talking with Senator Hurtado and her staff, there is a report that USDA has done at the direction of Congress, and they collected some data, collected some information on, you know, foreign government control of ag land and that. And they use some more specific definitions and things of what control is and you know, more than 10% control and some other things where this bill was pretty wide open. And then the other part this bill had that really had the California Department of Food and Ag collecting some of that data for California specific as well. And that was a cost concern to the governor. So I think, if this was to be done again in California or the senator was to run this again, and I've not talked specifically to her staff since that time, it would likely be, need to have more definitions in the code and, you know, what does control mean? You know, much more specificity. Is a food processor involved in that or in or out? There was a lot of those, areas that were concerned because maybe some entity in California based is using money, you know, combined with from a government, a foreign government, in addition to other money. Maybe the PERS, they get, you know, PERS puts $10 million in and other entities put X amount in. And so it really would have to get more, or at least in conversations even with the senator's staff, you'd have to get more specific with, you know, what do you mean by invest? What do you mean by control? Those kinds of things, because they, there is, I think, some investing that people would view as not being controlled, and other investing, obviously, if they came in and they own, and 50% of the money was from a sovereign trust or something in that area, you'd have more of that. So I think there is some ongoing conversations and will be some ongoing conversations with USDA as well. And I've talked to the Department of Food and Agriculture on this and trying to get to see if they could, you know, aggregate the data in USDA for California and not require a state, you know, law that would have different rules and different standards. So I know there's some conversation about how they could do it better for and see if there's California aggregated data there. So that's where that's going. And I don't know if they'll do another bill. They haven't indicated that yet. But if we hear, we'll definitely let Steve and Kathy and Matt know.
Okay. Next question on page 6, under drought and water highlights, $6.8 million in general fund to various departments for expediting large-scale habitat projects. These grants, are they open only to like LA County Department of Parks and Rec, or can it be used by nonprofits?
Anthony, he's our budget guy, so I will kick it to him. Yeah.
I do not have a specific answer for that question. I can look that up for you and get back to you, though.
Okay, thank you. For nonprofits and for Department of Parks and Rec.
Okay.
All right. Next question on page 7 regarding the CARB's Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation. So there's a public hearing on October 7th. Mr. Cole, will our fleet supervisor be attending that meeting, or anyone from our staff?
It's already passed.
That's right.
October 27th.
October
27th.
Next
Thursday.
It's
going to be. I will check. We can definitely have somebody present.
Maybe Mr. Ramirez, right?
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
And question for Dennis and Anthony. So on the three bullet points, there's you finish your report where feasible. Is there a wiggle room here for our agency to continue using, fossil fuel vehicles past the deadline, or is that not a possibility? Up on page 7, three of your bullet points.
Yeah, so that's the fleet rule that is being implemented currently, and there is. A lot of conversation on that. Actually, I was reading the Aqua newsletter today, and they were, bringing that forward as well. There is, that's still an evolving rule on how it will be implemented. The CARB is working on that, and the locals exactly what falls under each category. And so we're going to be continuing to follow that. We've been talking to Steve. That was one of actually the conversations is there are exemptions for, say, first responders, police and fire vehicles. Well, is it appropriate? And I think this is a general question that we'll talk with others about. But is it appropriate if for a maintenance vehicle for the districts to also potentially be exempted? Because if the firefighters hook up to a pipe and there's an issue, that truck needs to be where it's supposed to be at that time and do what they need to do and have the right tools and the right mechanical attributes. And so that was a conversation that actually Steve brought to us. Just maybe a week ago. And so those are conversations that I think Aqua is going to have and see how that should be handled and whether there is a willingness to look at those types of vehicles as well, a more narrow exemption, but to see if there's appropriate to add other types of emergency response vehicles like ones that repair water mains.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've, on our last engineering committee meeting, we've heard a report from our operations chief, Mr. Abercrombie, regarding fire hydrants. And the agency is responsible for maintaining them. And should there be should one fail or a car crash into, the agency is responsible to fix that problem. So we have to arrive there relatively quickly to address it. So please do advocate on our behalf regarding that. And Mr. Cole, thank you for bringing that to our advocates' attention.
I'm going to draw a simple loop picture of what happens in an emergency, right? It's not rocket science. Major emergency, earthquakes, we all know the power goes off. if you have an electric fleet that is designed to try and go out and respond, and the vehicle's not charged, you're not going to respond. So if you can't respond, the pipes broke, fire department's not going to have any water, talking about the fire, house is going to burn down. So, I mean, it's a very simple logic loop that I think we've just, you know, missed as a question of how that actually works. But we're going to be engaging in that for sure. We are engaged with Aqua as a broader coalition to have this discussion. So
okay. Thank you, Mr. Cole. And lastly, I just want to again thank you on page 6, your activity report. Always appreciate which meetings you guys attend and where you guys advocate on our behalf. Before we move on to another item, any other questions, comments? Director Bronstein.
I had a question based off of what you were asking. And it's actually for Mr. Cole. So it's about the water use, the indoor water use. So is that also for businesses, hospitals, schools, things like that?
There's a whole different set of standards that apply to those customer classes.
Okay.
So those are getting developed as well. And there'll be a set of standards or recommendations that come down for how those types of institutions or other things are to be in water. You know, the difficult one comes in like a business. I mean, you can have a warehouse, you know, square footage wise, right? You go through this business park, you have square footage that's a warehouse, got a couple of restrooms in it, not much water use. You go over to the Gay King Industrial Park now, and there's a business called Drink Pack that they're making consumables. Totally different business model, but you could have a very similar square footage. And so how do you go through and assign standards that are flexible enough to understand kind of that dynamic? And so it's going to be a lot of work in that sector to develop the standards.
Speaking of Drink Pack, are they pumping water? I didn't understand. I heard at the Economic Outlook a discussion of their business, but I didn't understand.
No, they're connected to the public water system.
But when they are filling all that stuff up, do they like start with a syrup and then they're putting water in or something like that?
I haven't seen the specific process chain, but...
Yeah, but are they using really a lot of water?
Yes, the process uses... They're producing, you know, drink of a large portion
They must be doing that then. Yeah, I was wondering how we're providing for them because it sounded enormous.
Okay. Any questions, comments from our advocates? All right.
Thank you,
Dennis, Anthony, and Leah. All right, we're going to move on to item 3.3, legislative consultant report presented by Han Brawley.
Good evening.
City and County. Go ahead.
Good evening. Just give you some highlights from my report regarding the Safe Clean Water Program. Did participate with two other individuals from the committee on a tour of the two of the projects that have been funded. In the Stevenson Ranch area, do not know if other tours were conducted. We expected we would have a robust discussion at our October 6th meeting, and the day after our tour, the county staff canceled that meeting, which they've been doing, unfortunately, several times this year. So our next meeting will be on November 3rd, and we hope that we'd have better understanding of not only the status of those two projects, some answers to the questions of whether or not they could be integrated in any way and just get a little bit better quantification of the benefit of those projects. We also asked for some reports on the history of the first project that was ever approved. 2 years ago was up in Castaic and also a project near Hart High School. So I'm hoping we'll have more information that we can share after the November 3rd meeting. Board of Supervisors, the two issues of interest in this community. One I verbally reported on at the last meeting, that the Tesoro annexation, which is both the existing and the new project, was approved, including the transfer of the Adobe House to the city of Santa Cruda. LAFCO's approved it. It goes to a protest hearing on November 9th. Protest hearings require a significant number of people to protest, which would be earth-shattering if that were to occur. So it should be approved on November 9th and then proceed very soon thereafter, probably by the end of November, to be recorded, and those properties will be part of the city of Santa Clarita. As I think I've mentioned in the past, from a timing point of view, city needs to have it done before the end of the year so they can start collecting the property tax at the end of this fiscal year. Otherwise, they have to wait a whole nother year and they lose out on those funds. The other big issue was the Castaic fire and the impacts on Interstate 5 and mobility in Castaic, which led Supervisor Barger to ask for an update on traffic improvements in the area. And that, I believe, will be an ongoing report and project to see what can be done when these types of issues happen. As we know, they sometimes have snow issues in the Grapevine, but the mobility in this case was significant, obviously, and there's going to be, I think, continued focus on that. As far as the city council, the first meeting in September, I'm not a tech person at all, so for those of you who are tech, you will probably get interest in this, was the whole issue of saving all this Santa Clarita Valley Historical Digital information on new servers, new system, ultimately get into the library and be run by the city. They've been operated by the nonprofit SCVTV for years, and apparently their equipment is antiquated, to put it mildly. So not sure it was necessary for the number of people who spoke, but they had a huge number of people come in support. And what's happening now is the city supporting their effort to get a federal grant and agreeing to match it with $300,000. So we'll see how that occurs, whether they get that grant or not, but obviously a lot of public support for this concept. And then the expansion of Central Park, as you may know, the original contractor was found not performing under the contract, was kicked off the project. They've gone through with the insurance company, has picked a new contractor to finish the four new ball fields in Central Park, and that was approved. The second meeting in September, another presentation by Southern California Edison on their update on their efforts to harden the system and not have service interruption. The council seemed to be to well receive that. Also a lot of discussion on city regarding drug issues in a report, or I should say a forum that was held by the city, sponsored by the city. Also, a city's energy infrastructure and monetization program that was very complicated, very detailed, basically spending a lot of money on infrastructure to save money on operations. There was another proposal to sponsor one of the city's facilities. You may remember that the Cube, the ice skating facility, did a sponsorship with Five Point earlier in the year. This was for the Aquatic Center for 3 years at $50,000 per year. Some discussion about whether or not it was enough money. Also, how many other facilities might there be? But after that discussion, it still passed 5-0. And then the most recent city council meeting just a week and a half ago, not a lot of activity. There's a design contract for the Via Princesa Park, which is where the existing Metrolink station is. The assumption is that that will be moving up to the Vista Canyon project, and that area will become a park. There was a lot of specifics, pickleball, which I've never done, but I understand maybe people my age should be doing it. But a lot of comments about that and the need for more pickleball courts. The response was, this is the start of the design process. And so there'll be a lot of input on that. And then the other major issue was just a continuation of the city support for the Committee on Aging, which is basically the Santa Clara Valley Senior Center, and both their transportation and food delivery programs. And was included in this was funding to help with 4 new hybrid vehicles out of the 10 that they need. And that's my report.
Thank you. Any questions from the public? Comments, questions from directors? Mr. Martin.
Good to see you again, hon. On the safe, clean water, your 2 paragraphs, one of which talks about the cancellation of a meeting, and the second paragraph talks about the adoption of the 22-23 budget of, if I'm reading right, $1,444,336,000.
Yeah, I just looked at that and said, boy, that's a lot of money. And that might obviously be a mistake. I will go back and look at that. But that was the annual.
That's countywide, right?
Right. That's the whole system, the whole county. I'll double check the amount. But it was the approval by the County Board of Supervisors, which they do every year for just kind of certifying the program that comes up. I think there are 12 WASs, 12 areas in the whole county. And so it kind of filters up. And then this is the program which they have to adopt on an annual basis. Well, I'll double check the expenditure amount because I just saw that and noticed that when I was getting ready.
I recall when Measure W was passed, that was a fixed percentage that was going to go for administration by the county. And then the remainder was going to be divided amongst the various areas, as you say. Do we know what the number is for the area that we're included in that Mr. Cole sits on the board? And
I will get that for you and have it at the next meeting. So there's, I want to say it's 15%. I could be wrong. Maybe a little bit higher than that. That goes to the local jurisdictions, or in this case, the city of Santa Cruz. There's the administrative overhead, and then the rest is for projects. Well, let me get those details. I don't want to guess at it, and I'll have it for you at the next meeting.
I can't give you the specific reference, but I thought our menu was out of our LA Times. But is there a sense that this money is not rolling out fast enough to the various projects that need to be built?
I think I'm not sure. I would put it that the money's not rolling out fast enough. I think the frustration is that the projects are just, there's so much time and effort in design and then building them. And then what are you getting the bang for the buck? And I think that's what we've seen in our local WAS to some degree. I do not know what's happening in other WAS throughout the county, but I know that's something that our local group is struggling with as to, all the money that we're spending, and you know, we're not even a construction phase. I think it's stack maybe in the construction phase, but that's what we're trying to get more of a handle on.
Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you.
Director Kelly.
When will this report go to the board? The first board meeting in November or the second?
Are you referring to WAS report or report in general for both or POL?
The entire committee report, when's that going to go to the board?
So we do the summary, not at the next meeting, but the following meeting. So it'd be the first meeting in November
1st.
First meeting in November. So I think this dollar amount is significant enough that I'd like to have a confirmation before this is submitted for the next board meeting. If it's correct, then just ratification of it. If it's incorrect, then I'd like to see your report modified so that the proper number goes to the board meeting.
No problem. I can get that.
You're looking at a week and a half, 2 weeks instead of looking at a month. So.
Yeah. I'll get it to Steve by early next week.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Any other comments or questions from directors? No, okay. Thank you, Hunt. Thank you for your
report. Thank you.
please make that correction. All right, we're going to move on to item four, the suspension of Jerry Gladbeck Scholarship and our internship, presented by Ms. Martin. Ms. Martin, go ahead.
Thank you so much. We, in the past, there has been scholarships offered, not in my time here, but under Castaic Lake Water Agency working through COC. And somebody need to mute. So what this item does is just summarize a few options for scholarships, and it also talks briefly about internships. So let me address that one piece first. There is definite interest among the staff, and I'm sure board support as well, to implement internships across our agency. There's so many benefits to be gained. That would be a policy that's driven more by HR, and Rochelle will take that item through finance and admin rather than here. We would come in with support for any kind of materials that were created and outreach and marketing to try to find those potential interns. So what I want to talk most about today is scholarships. Starting local and starting simple, I did speak with Regina Blasberg, who chairs the Water Systems Technology Department at CSC. They offer two options. One we took advantage of in the past, option one. There's a number of drawbacks to that. They have a portal on their website where a student can fill out one application and then it matches them with what might fit them. The college credits them. So when they register, their registration is covered, or they buy books, it's covered. The money doesn't go right to the student. With the Water Systems Technology Program, that doesn't really benefit the students that participate in that. It's a very inexpensive program to go through. All of the books are free. Many of them were written by SCB Water employees. And through a process that community colleges have, they are all offered for free. And per unit tuition there is very low. So to offer even a small scholarship that way, it'd be difficult for a student to take advantage of that and actually be able to use that full amount. So another option that Regina offered was to just a scholarship that we would provide. So it would be on the agency's the college's website. The water technology instructors would share that information with the students in their class so that they know that it's available. The application would be online, but those applications would come to us. And then we would have an internal committee that reviewed and selected the honorees for that scholarship. And we would issue the scholarship amount directly to the student. Would give them a check, basically. When I wrote this, Rochelle and I had spoken, but she had a chance to review this further, and she shared it with Joe Byrne, just our legal counsel, just to be sure that all the bases were covered. There were a couple of minor edits that Joe would say to make to this. So if we agree on this and want to forward it to the board for approval to start this program, a couple things that we would change. One is, when I talk about the option two, I mentioned having more discretion to use the funds, which we would still do, but we wouldn't spell out like specific things that they might be able to use. I think I hear it have in here like gas and childcare. We wouldn't exclude them being able to do that, but we would just state more broadly educational related expenses, or expenses in relation and support to the furthering of their education. So that may be what they need, but we wouldn't spell that out. Then we'd also make a more direct connection, which I don't have on here. It's just implied as to the benefit SCB Water gets by offering those scholarships. And that would be in supporting students that are looking to enter into the water industry and just giving them help and creating a better educated pool of potential employees for our future peaks. And that concludes my report. The only other thing I do have one more thing. So we would need to develop an application. And some of the things that we would need to come up with is what those selection criteria would be. So when we're reviewing the applications, what things do we want to look at? Do we want, I would still say to keep it simple to begin with, for sure. Like, even if they're just trying to get from a T1 to a T2 and they need to take that test, that would be enough, not requiring that they're going after a certain degree or anything. And whether they we want to have them carrying a certain number of units. Again, some of them might need just that 1-3-unit class to prepare for a test. I think we try to keep it as broad as we can to make it as applicable to as many students as we can. Welcome. Any questions or input?
Any questions to the public?
There's none.
All right. Dr. Plumbeck.
I don't understand how you're going to certain that they're actually attending classes.
That would definitely be one of the criteria. We could ask for their, it would ask, are you a student at COC? And we can certainly verify that or ask them to submit their proof of enrollment.
So would you get the scholarship after they completed or when they registered for the classes?
To be a benefit to a student that was really in need of this money, you would need to provide it prior to registration, because the way the college is now, and Regina indicated this has been a change, they have to pay at registration. Tuition is due the moment they register, where before you could register and the tuition came due later, and that's not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can see why they need it in advance. I just don't understand what's going to stop them from applying and then maybe not taking the class.
That's a very valid question. We may be able to work something into the application process.
It's nice to trust everybody.
I'm sure they can demonstrate a pattern, of someone's behavior. If they've been taking classes or if they've been, if they've been doing something, chances are they're going to continue and they're not just trying to scam people.
It could be an option to say that they have successfully completed one class in the water technology department.
That might be a good way to do that. Because that would at least show interest if there's interest in it.
That would restrict us only to COC students.
Letters of recommendation too could be part of the criteria too. So you have people. It could be an employer. It can be, a teacher that shows that this is someone that's actually serious.
There's just so much scamming and all the state grants and the COVID stuff. It would be too bad to have Garrett, Director Gladbach's memory, and not have them actually succeed.
I'm leaning more towards internships. I think Jerry, obviously was an engineer, but he was also involved with policy, which involves communications, finance, and having an internship versus a scholarship. The way I look at it, from my own experience, I received a couple, and they were relatively small. And quite frankly, I don't remember what I wrote on those applications. But internships, I remember every single one of them. I mean, they were monumental to my development, my career, and interactions with actual professionals at a facility. It's night and day between academia and actually working in at a plant, at a financial office, with someone who has years of experience to guide them in the right direction. So my personal preference is more of an internship. We can we can call it a Jerry Gladbeck's internship with details of his accomplishments and all eras of our departments, whether it be water resources, engineering, or operations, or policy. And HR. And, whenever they, come in on the first day, they do receive a packet, just like we have received packets when we become directors. And an acknowledgement is made right there that this was in recognition of former Vice President Jerry Gladbach and his many, many years of accomplishments and how he shaped those areas for that particular department that interest going into. That's my personal view. President Martin?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why we have to choose between the two.
Yeah.
I think we should do both. I think we should do internships and scholarships. And that scholarship amount that you refer to seems to be work well with those water technology classes that people take. It seems to me that staff's already made a good recommendation on this on the one possible scenario situation and keep it in the $500 range for however many. Do we know how many students register for water technology classes, whether it be students or working people or whoever?
Right. I haven't heard the latest, but we can get the statistics on it. And I want to say it's probably in like the 100 range, just because of the number of classes I think they've got.
Per class or total?
No, total. They typically have 2 to 3 classes per kind of set. And so I think it's, 75 to 100, kind of in that range for the students. But we can get numbers on that.
Yeah, I would love to see us start off with both internships and scholarships and see how it works in the first year and see where we go from there, right? That's what I'd love to see, yeah.
Seems like...
Director Kelly.
We sponsored a scholarship with the college for many years. I was the individual that was chosen to attend the award ceremony. The recognition that we got was pretty much on stage only, so we didn't get a lot of what I would consider public relations benefit from it. I think 4 out of the 5 years, I was lucky to hear from the recipient, even though I was present, a thank you or anything else. And I don't remember the agency getting a thank you card or anything of that nature either. So if we're looking for bang for our buck, I think that's something we need to consider. The Chamber of Commerce had a scholarship program, and it was in the range of $5,000 for the scholarship for an individual that was chosen. And there were multiple people, and they were eventually selected down to one. The first year, the Chamber ran into a similar situation to what that Pimec was just talking about. So where the individual ended up with the money and didn't attend school and didn't return the funds. So the second year, the Chamber continued to do the same philosophy, except they kept the money and they dispersed the money based on expenses. So the college would send the registration papers over to the chamber would cut the check for the registration. Then when it came time for books, the chamber would cut the check for books, et cetera. I know that's getting us more involved, but maybe it also gives us the opportunity to trust a little bit more in today's economy and today's world to benefit everybody. It sounds like a good win-win to do an internship and, a scholarship. Internships through the college are usually more based on school credits. And of course, we could put up money on the internship to cover books and additional classes and supplies and things like that. But internships are normally you're going to have some kind of a contract. You have to put in so many hours in order to qualify for it. And once again, if they're in for 120 hours, and they do 60, what are you going to do? And I used to use interns all the time from the college in my practice. And some of them were excellent and other ones were just tagging along. Oh, gosh, I got 4 more hours. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about it is I also had one intern that took 160 hours, which was 4 credits. And he was excellent. And I asked him at the end, do you want to continue working? And he says, well, the one thing that the internship taught me was I don't want to be an accountant. So you need to look at some of this and not make a hasty judgment on it. And we also might get more bang for our buck if we sponsor an Aqua scholarship under Jerry's name since Jerry's so strong with ACRA, so strong with JPIA, as well as the agency. And I think, you know, we turn around and see 2,300 people at a conference, you know, that all know Jerry and recognize Jerry. And there might be some greater value to having this outside the agency and, of course, potentially less work for the agency in monitoring things, because you just make the check to ACWA and ACWA brings them on stage, just like they bring the attorneys on stage and, you know, other recipients of the different scholarships. So I don't know that we're at a time crunch for this, but I might suggest you do a little bit more research on in-house versus, you know, out of house service and consider something like that. So that's my comments. Thank you.
I agree about the ACWA. I think that's really good idea. That's a good idea, Archie. I don't know if we discussed, I see that there's like a $2,500 a year thing in here at the end, but I don't know if we discussed how much this is going to cost or what the level is, if it's going to be $2,500 or not. I mean, did we ever talk about that? Because the other thing is, if you have an internship, you may in staff time be investing substantially more than $2,500, because sometimes you need a lot of work with students.
Okay, well, maybe to respond back to you or to Kelly, you don't really have to go through a college or university to do an internship. This could be just a summer contract with that student themselves, provided they're 18 and above, and you know, are able to legally work in the state of California. And you can do that. And obviously there's an interview process. So whoever will be assigned at that particular department to handle the interns, you know, they'll have a pool of applicants that they can choose from. So chances are having someone that's there to waste someone's time may not happen, may not be the case. So that's one option I'm calling at it. But Ms. Martin, you have a comment?
Yes, a couple. So this item in this budget does only factor in scholarships. So before I talk and answer a few of the questions on that, Rochelle already has a very robust draft policy for internships that talks through everything that's been mentioned here tonight and 100 more things I never would have thought of. So it's being reviewed at the staff level right now, and it's going to go to the next governing committee.
I think so.
I think it's going to be at the next finance and admin committee. So that group is going to get a chance to really chew on that. It'll make its way up through the board. But it addresses all the things that you mentioned. Cost, how many hours they need to do, what kind of accountability there is, the resources that, like say I decide I wanted one, I would have to say, this is what I want, this is the kind of things that I would have them do, this is where they'd sit, here's the resources I'd be able to provide. And so there would be a lot that would be put into that. For tonight, here are a couple of ideas. I will talk to ACWA, and so if we want to stop there, I can just go and research that option. If I could just share a little bit about what I took away from my conversation with Ms. Blasberg at COC, the students that go through the water technology class, many of them are actually our employees, and they get reimbursed through the agency's education reimbursement program. But other students, it's just a solid trade. It's solid training to be able to start in these classes in preparation to try to get your first D1 or T1 because you're interested in entering the industry. And a lot of them have very few resources of their own. So the way I had put this together, based on just her kind of explaining the type of students that are in those classes, is something that didn't have any barriers to participation, and they could help with their basic needs that let them get to class a couple hours a week and work on this. It wouldn't really have a big return on investment in terms of PR. It's not a big flashy one. We would certainly celebrate it and talk about who'd been aborted. We'd have that person come to the board to get an official presentation of it. We would we would do as much as we can, both to let the community know that we're supporting that and instill in that student who's been awarded it that this is, you know, even though the amount is small, it's still, you know, important to us that they understand we're investing in them. Adding some of the different steps we've talked about in terms of, you know, we couldn't put our finance department, I think that would be a lot to have them issuing a check for, you know, $150 to cover that thing after they get some proof from the college. There isn't a process set up with the college for that. I could probably come up with some other ways to add the accountability factor or something that would make you more committed to that. So my suggestion then would be, I can just go back with comments that I received tonight, look a little bit more at accountability issues, ask Aqua about that process. Because I know like BB&K actually did that application vetting and chose the winner. It was just presented in conjunction with Aqua somehow. So I can see what that process is. And maybe that's a better option for us. But the internship that's moving forward, and you guys will get a chance to hear lots about it.
Director Bronstein.
So I didn't comment yet on the first round, but I was going to. Sorry. No, it's good because I wanted to hear what you have to say. So I actually agree with Director Orzechowski on this. I personally tend to be way more excited about internships in general because I think, again, it's a foot in the door, right? It's a way to start. It's a way to get in, to get some kind of experience to see if you even want to do this. It's a very different reading and learning and then actually going and doing it. That's what I tell my kids all the time. As far as if we decide to do a scholarship as well, I'm completely open to that idea as well. Personally, my preference would to be keeping it local and to invest in our own community and in people that are going here to our college, you know, community college. Again, people might disagree with that and totally fine. But I kind of like the idea of us investing in our community. And I think that, you know, yes, I probably am a way more trusting person than I should be. I get it. I also, though, trust that our staff can go through applications, come up with the process, come up with questions. Everybody here seems extremely competent, and I would have probably hired all of you to do the same work. So I'm not going to even go into, you know, what everybody should ask or how to do it exactly. But as I said, if we want to do, we could also just do a pilot program and do like 3 scholarships or 2 scholarships, you know, kind of thing, just to see how it goes, to see how we feel about it, and see what we learn from our mistakes going forward or not. Maybe it'll be amazing and wonderful. And part of me also feels like if somebody really needs to scam us out of $500, we're going to get scammed out of $500, like no matter what, you know, people will find a way to cut corners. So it's not like we're giving away $5,000, which be a lot of money. $500 is a lot of money too. I don't want to seem like I don't, you know, throwing away money, but in the scheme of things, it really, you know, if we can encourage somebody local, maybe that person will then later on come and be an intern here and, you know, be part of the agency. I don't know. I like that feeling. And I think that to me sounds a lot like Director Gladbeck, you know, who he was. So that's my take.
You know, I agree with you on the internships. You know, back in the covered wagon days when I was going to school.
Covered wagons.
They didn't call it internship, but I was hired by a local engineering company as a summer hire and then did some part-time work during the school year. They call it student engineer. Now they call it internship. But like Peter said, this kind of directs you in the path that you eventually take. Yes, and RJ's right. Maybe you find out you don't really like that, but I know for me, it really kind of set my pattern in the direction of engineering.
And honestly, if it's for school credit,
and it's absolutely right. It's a complete different environment working in a professional office as opposed to going to school and hearing from a lecturer and doing homework. Oh no, it's completely different. You're associated with professionals and people actually doing this for a living. It's a real eye opener, I think, for students, and it's a big help. So I'd be very supportive of internships. Yeah.
Okay, so I see we have two pathways we can go. I'm hearing internship and scholarship. I'm also hearing a lot more weight put on internships versus scholarships due to all the issues involved. And I hear if we do scholarships to keep it local, which I agree as well. I think there's a consensus here on keeping it local as well. Now, we don't have to make a decision today, but what is our timeline, Ms. Martin?
If we want to plug into the COC registration cycle, we would just need to get out in the field with it like January, February, so that we can solicit applications prior to the May registration. So we still have time.
So we have to reconvene as a committee and give them a recommendation, and then that'll go in front of the board. So that means we have November to do that, and then December to vote on it on the board. That'll give you enough time.
Yes. And based on the budget amount and the program, does it need to go to the board if we decided to move forward? Because it's something that's identified in the budget.
Yeah, I mean, not from a financial standpoint.
Just policy-wise.
Probably the board would want to check in on this one just because of what it is. But I don't.
How about if I come back next month with a draft application so we can see like what the criteria would be and more spelled out like what the application review process and the accountability process would be and the AQUA information. Okay. And then you all could just give me a go or no go on that.
So directors, we have going via COC, going via AQUA in terms of scholarship. These are the two options right now. Is that correct, Ms. Martin? And you can provide us with some sort of plan for those two options. Okay. And then as far as the internship, that all the T's have been crossed, all the I's have been dotted in terms of an intern for each department at SCV Water.
No, my purpose of tonight was just letting you know it's been punted over to F&A. So it'll come up to them and
I'll get to hear it soon.
And that will certainly come up
this one. Or yeah. Next month.
I think
this
it's month? In this month.
Like Monday?
Well, do we know if
Monday. Monday is Monday.
So that one's on a track. It's going. So really what we're dealing with here in this committee is the scholarship.
Well, I don't want to miss that on the concept of naming the internship in memory of
We'll definitely reinforce that.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got you. F&A.
If I had to pick one for Jerry, I would certainly pick that one. That is his spirit for sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So for the next POL committee meeting, everyone's in agreement. We'll have two types of applications on 5.1 for COC and some sort of summary on the internship in Jerry Gladbeck's honor. Okay.
So I've been patiently waiting. Maybe you thought my arm was just hurting, but
that's what I thought.
some rebuttals and just presenting my final case for my side. First of all, whether it's 500 or 5,000, that's a flea in the in the pocket of COC, who's got a $100 million budget. I don't like the idea of causing more work for staff, whether it's an internship or whether it's scholarship, simply because, we're on a tight table now. We continue to expand, and I think it's an unnecessary situation. And I look at, for me, sharing Jerry with his peers and his constituents and everybody throughout the state that knows that what Jerry is, to me, has more value in presenting Jerry's legacy than doing it local. And I say that because I was at a chamber mixer last night And we were talking about all the people that, you know, that passed in the last, you know, 90 days, 6 months. And they were naming people. And I said, yeah. And I said, you know, don't forget Jerry Gladbach. And like five people said, what happened to Jerry? So there's not a lot of acknowledgement in our community as to what has happened to Jerry. And maybe not a lot of people know who Jerry Gladbach is. If we have a $2,500 budget, I know there's no logical reason that we can't expand that to $5,000. You know, by revamping the budget, it's done all the time through our agency on other situations. So, and the only other thing I can say is AQUA recognized Steve, the executive director that passed away from ALOS, or AOLS, whatever. You know, and that started off with a lot of recognition and developed into a fundraising golf tournament that raises thousands of dollars a year to go back into fighting his disease. Well, Jerry didn't have a disease, but it's something that AQUA has a bigger capability of expanding on Jerry's legacy than I think we do. And that's my sales pitch, to take it to AQUA and not keep it local. And I'm done. So you go back to the direction you want. But I look at a much bigger goal for Jerry than something local.
Thank you, Director Kellen. Ms. Martin, will you note that in your conversations with Bethel? Okay. Let's go ahead and move forward with item number 5, discussion of Water Academy pilot sessions, given by Ms. Martin.
Thank you. This is bringing back details on how we'd like to launch a pilot session for a Water Academy. And presenting tonight will be Laura Gallegos, our public affairs specialist. She came to us a year ago, next week, it'll be a whole year, from Palmdale Water, where she implemented a similar program. So, Laura, are you there? Let's see that name.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. So, I'm Laura Gallegos. I'm the Public Affairs Specialist on the Outreach Team. I'm here tonight to share our plan to launch the SCV Water Academy. Our team used previous interests, discussions, and feedback to create a detailed proposal attached to the memo. We hope to reach and capture a variety of members in our community to educate them about our agency and the work that we do, and also inform them about future plans. Our goal for the Academy is to help educate, engage customers and members of the community, who will also have an increased awareness of what it takes to deliver water straight to their homes and businesses. As you can see in the proposal, the plan is to start marketing before the end of the year. It also describes our application process and topics we will cover. So knowing what our goals are and our plans to launch the Academy, do you guys have any questions or feedbacks for the program?
Does that go to your presentation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't you get stopped? Scoot. There we go.
Do we have any questions from the public?
There's none.
Questions? Okay, directors.
Oh.
Rick Bronstein.
So I'm very excited about this. This looks really, really cool. And I was wondering, I mean, I guess it's a pilot session, so that's awesome. So I understand that we're also trying to keep it, I guess, small. I guess my question is more about where you see it going versus the pilot, because you can have it recorded, you can have it, you know, set up in a way where people can take, you know, Zoom classes or something kind of thing to lower the cost and open it up to more people. But I guess I'm just trying to figure out how far is this, like, what's your wish for this?
So So I would say ideally the purpose of this is to do it in person, to make those connections with members of the community. I think that's what's going to differentiate us from other programs online. All the information we're going to present will probably be on our website. However, the goal is to actually engage the members of the community in this program. So that is why in the pilot session, we're going to do it in person. And the goal and the idea would be that those 20 people that go through the program will then share our academy with other members of the community, and then we'll get more applicants and start building a base of members of our community who are well-educated and have already gone through a academy with us.
And if I could add to that too, we have a number of different types of programs and programming that we have in place or that we're planning. So another new program that Laura is putting together is a series called Water Matters. The first one is going to be on the lawn replacement program. These are going to be virtual, so you've got more of an unlimited audience. So some of the topics that we might offer at this Water Academy, which is envisioned to be face-to-face, hands-on, engaged that way, could be translated into these Water Matters talks where it's broader, more people are able to attend. There's no cost. It's just like an online interactive webinar.
So because I'm just thinking about it like you can take it to, okay, Cub Scouts might be a little bit too young, but to different groups, you know, different senior centers, sure, but like retiree groups or like, you know, a group of people that like a softball team or something like that, that we can target a group of people that are all doing it together for fun. I mean, I guess this looks like fun to me, but and so I'm just wondering if there's a way to, because it seems a little costly to constantly be doing it, you know, so I'm just trying to figure out if there's, I want it to be offered to as many people as possible and as many settings as possible. And like, you know, I envision it kind of like a paint night, you know, kind of thing where you go, you know, with your girlfriends and you go and you learn something new because you care about, you know, your community, your environment, your water. So I was just wondering if there's a way to like translate that. Or record them, and as I said, and then they can be on YouTube. People can do it on their own.
Yeah, I think that the beauty in it being a pilot is that we really can change it and tweak it as we go. So I think the way we're proposing it would be a great way to present it to the community. And then if they really feel at the end of it that more people should see it, that's the beauty. We can create or we can elaborate the program some more.
Okay. There's
something, and I think the conversation on this started probably before you were elected. We had been talking about this for a while. We had it kind of planned, and then COVID hit, and it's a very specific targeted program with a specific outcome we're looking for. So like, if you look in the proposal, this is over the course of 4 sessions. It's not a one-time thing. So they are committing. They're coming back every week. They're getting to know this cohort. So kind of like some cities will do, they call like a Santa Clarita 101 or a Citizens Academy kind of thing. It's like that where they really feel like they have an inside track and then behind the scenes. And we're developing these, we're not calling it ambassadors. They may or may not agree with how we operate, but they're educated and at least understand why we do what we do. But I love those ideas, and that Water Matters thing that Laura's working on will actually cover a lot of those bases. And I like the idea of like targeting different already existing groups. It's sort of our speakers bureau approach too that we have.
Okay. So Ms. Martin and Ms. Gallegos, my understanding that this is focused to something similar to the Blue Ribbon Committee. I've attended a few of those. And in those, I saw, you know, local leaders. So before he was a congressman, Mike Garcia was there. Mark Hershey also attended these Blue Ribbon Committee meetings. Are we tailoring this to like HOA presidents, maybe pastors, rabbis, leaders from houses of worship, maybe some local businesses that would be that do use a lot of water for their businesses? Would they be interested in going to these? Is this the target audience? What is the target audience?
So in our proposal, our target audience is actually a diverse representation of the members of the community and customers. So yes, we can invite set out an invitation to all the members that you mentioned, but we really want to put it out there so that your neighbor can apply and be let in. So it's more like getting a diverse group of members of the community to come learn about us. Not necessarily the folks who would be in office or all our local leaders, but we would, of course, invite them to come and join.
Do we have a program where we invite not our local leaders, but their staff? Someone from Ms. Berger's office, from Garcia's office, Valadier's office, from different political groups in the area. Do we have a program like that?
We have done a couple of times. It's also a victim of COVID, I guess. We probably could have done a virtual legislative staff briefing. And it was 3 or 4 hours in this room with those representatives. And we went through all of our legislative policies, what our priorities for the year, what issues we're facing. So we have done those in the past.
Okay, so for this program, it's more tailored toward, our customers, and then maybe leaders and that groups or clubs in SCD in Santa Clara Valley. Is that right?
Correct. And the goal is we're going to cast a wide net and then see who's interested and help them get engaged.
Okay. How many people are you expect, based on what you're presented today and what we have here in this memo? How many people would you anticipate attending this session, this pilot class?
I would say a group of 20 to 25 would be ideal. Anything larger than that, people become a little less inclined to become very vocal. So we would like to keep a small group, about 20 to 25. And of course, we have an application process. So based on who applies and if they're a customer. So of course, we're going to prefer our customers or people who live in the area to go through this program.
Okay. President Martin.
Thank you, Chair Rosa Husky. I do like the pilot session proposal. We did the Blue Ribbon Committee some time ago before your time. And what I like about the proposal is it's a specific subject matter in each of the four meetings so that you know going in that what it is you're going to hear about at each of the four meetings. When we did the Blue Ribbon Committee, it kind of evolved from meeting to meeting, and we started off with a pretty good attendance, and then it kind of dropped off. In this proposal, I think you probably have a better chance of maintaining the initial group through the four meetings once they know there are four meetings and the subject matter. And I think part of the selection process should be the willingness to commit to come to all four meetings before you are added to the group. And I think it's certainly worthwhile to do it. In the past, the selection of the group to attend was a combination of board nominees and staff nominees, but I like this proposal better because it keeps the board out of it, keeps it from being any sort of relationship to community politics. But I know you're going to be selecting from the same pool of citizenry. So I'm supportive of doing this as a pilot session and see how it goes. I like it.
Martin, any other questions? Comments from directors? Director Bronstein.
I was wondering if we can be a fly on the wall.
So
that was one of my questions.
Laura, you had that one idea that about board members and Q&A.
Yeah, so I think it'd be great to like have a Q&A session at one of our one of the core sessions. Maybe two or three board members can join us on the tour, but like maybe rotate a couple of board members through if they are interested.
Yeah, we can have like a couple come to, so there's only two or three at each one, and the people there would have an opportunity to meet and ask you.
And then my other question is, eventually, do we think we'd be have the ability to present in Spanish?
I would say that as long as we can establish a program that becomes well-respected in the community and we start having other language-speaking folks want to join us, of course, we would then try to look for ways to accommodate to them. I am fluent in Spanish, so I can always sit next to them and let them know what's going on. But yeah, I think in the, if, as long as we can establish a program that becomes well-respected in the community and folks want to join, I think it's something we can look into.
That might be an option, too, when we continue on the Water Matters webinars, that you know, maybe every so often one of those is offered in Spanish. We'll see what kind of response. That might be a good way to test those waters, too.
Just wondering, because you know, if we really want to get everyone and really want to make everybody feel welcome, like they can come in and understand, it's just a thought.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from directors? And Ms. Martin, I think you need a recommendations from us to move this to next board meeting. Is that right?
No, we can just with your consensus, we'll get started on it.
Any objections? No objections. So you have the green light to proceed.
Awesome.
Good luck and fair winds.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
Okay. For the sake of time, we're going to move to item number 7. And we were going to go over item 7.1, 7.2, 7.3, and 7.4, not individually.
I think we've missed
one. I would rather skip that and do number 6.
Oh, yes, item 6, sorry.
Okay. Although Lindsay probably just went, touched the bullet.
Almost.
So just to quickly introduce, we have been talking about and working on a new website forever. And we are close, and we've been promising this group a sneak peek. So we're here to deliver that. Liz is going to just tell you a little bit about our process of how we got here and some of the goals we had and show you a few select pages and let you know what the next steps are for rollout. So Lindsay is our Senior Public Affairs Specialist. Take it away.
All right. Can everybody see my screen?
We can see your kids.
Oh, no, wrong screen. Hold, please.
That's the best presentation.
Hold on one.
Very fun.
I tried. You know what? My screens are backwards on this one. I apologize. Okay, how about now?
Yeah. All
right.
I have to apologize. That was fun seeing your kids.
Well, thank you. I think they're rather cute myself. So as Kathy mentioned, I'm Lindsay Gibson. I'm the Senior Public Affairs Specialist on the Outreach team. And I am so excited to finally get to share with you a presentation of our new website. And so as I'm walking through the new site, I wanted to share what our development process is. And really our goal with the new site was to be customer focused and really to think of people first as we were designing it. So the development process for our new website started with appearance. We really thought a lot about how do we want the website to look? How do we want it to feel? And then we thought about content. What information do we really want to include on our website? The next question is organization. How are we going to group it so that it makes sense? The next question is our menus and navigation. How are people going to then find the content that we've grouped together? And then lastly, I'm going to go over other considerations and next steps. So we started off by building a mood board to show our web developer. And what we were looking for in there were people, images of people, vibrant images. We wanted it to be colorful. And we actually worked on developing a complementary color palette that goes along with our SCV Water logo, as well as our Drought Ready logo. So the colors that you see on our mood board here are kind of marry the two logos together. And again, we also kind of decided to try to brainstorm a couple of words of what we wanted to describe our site as. And so we came up with the words that were friendly and approachable, focused on the community. You know, again, we wanted to be that forward thinking, you know, best in class water experts. And we really wanted to show all of the innovation that we're doing, especially with all of our different water supply projects. And I'm going to hop back to this. And actually, you know, I will leave it on my mood board because I enjoy that color palette's kind of soothing to me. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the best practices that we also focused on while working on the appearance of the site. We work closely using Adobe, and Adobe actually has a color wheel. So you can pick colors, see if they contrast well, see if they are complementary. And so any person who might have issues with their vision, you know, clearly would have trouble seeing yellow on a white background. Anybody would have trouble seeing yellow on a white background. So we really focused on the right color combinations to show that are accessible and ADA compliant. So that means that, you know, there's a high contrast and, you know, that people should be able to see them clearly, and there should be no question or concern when it comes to, you know, the different text and the color of the background. Next, I want to show you just a quick snapshot. So we focus on content. So what information do we want to include? So this is just a quick view of our Site Improve dashboard. So we used analytics, so Site Improve and Google and some other website best practices to prioritize what we wanted to keep and what we wanted to pare down. So this view actually shows like our most popular pages. And, you know, within the past quarter or so, you know, obviously our top pages is our homepage, various customer care related pages, also conservation and our rebates, and our drought ready page. So, you know, we know people are really interested in that information. So that's what we need to focus on when we move things over. And also I'll let you know, Site Improve, it's a quality control service for our website. So we attach it to our website and it crawls our site regularly. It looks for things like typos, broken links, other ADA compliance, like, hey, you actually didn't do the right job of putting a dark background and a light font over it. But, you know, nobody can read that. So, you know, it alerts us to things like errors so that we're able to fix that. I'm going to go ahead and hop back onto my overview real fast. Another thing that we looked at with the content were analytics for Google. So a little more than half view our website on a desktop and the other half view it on mobile. So we knew that having a mobile friendly website is very important. So that means basically that our website is set up and designed so that when you look at something on a smaller screen, the website's going to automatically reorient itself to the screen that you're looking at it on. And it's not like you have to go scrolling off to the side, because, you know, we've all been on our phones and all of a sudden you're trying to find some information on a website and you're either, you know, pinching it to make it bigger or you're, you know, trying to make it smaller. So that again was something that we kept in mind with our content. And also just to share a couple best practices, focusing on our PDF documents. So any kind of reports that we have, meeting packets, financial information, we determined that our best practice is to keep a current year of data or of those reports, plus two previous years on our website. And so we determined that holding any information longer than that increases our liability for an accessibility lawsuit. And that's not something that we want to deal with. But our solution for that, though, is to have our public record request posted on our website. And we have it posted in several areas, which I'll show you in a little bit. And so that way people can still have access to that, the information they need, even if it's not available on our current site. So after a much anticipated wait, I wanted to remind you what our current site looked like. This is our current site. And now for the drum roll, here is our new yourscvwater.com website. So with this, this is our content organization and our menu. So how are we going to group all of it? And again, as I mentioned before, we're focusing on customers first, what they need versus what we as an agency feel that we need to put out for them. So, you know, the website is not really meant to be this big, you know, clunky repository of things because, you know, we throw it on the website just because we think that it needs to be there. But I want to show you. So we actually have a nice little welcome to our website now. You know, we're inviting people in, telling them what to expect. The cool thing here is that with these buttons, we'll automatically scroll through. So right now we have messages on the drought and reporting water waste. But we do have the functionality to go in and edit those as the moment changes or that we need to get out a different message. Another area I want to show you is our quick links. They show you different things like the actions that people do most. They want to pay their bill or they want to get a rebate. So they're either looking to get money or they have to come here to give us money for their water bill. And other things, you know, they may want to know about us is our current board agenda. And they, you know, might want to look through our transparency section. And additionally, kind of going back to that customer focused, customer first, we have this prominent search bar up here. It's what can we help you find? You know, we're here to serve you. You know, what do you need from us? So now I'm going to take you through a little bit of a scroll through our website. So as I mentioned, you know, we have a header up here. And again, it's customizable. We are able to change all of the content there. Quick links are really some of our most visited. You know, again, we know that just by looking at our analytics. Below this is our spotlight section. So as Kathy mentioned, our website still is under construction. So we're working on our spotlight. But again, these are top items that are going to be like drought, PFAS, any new watershed planning efforts. So we want to make sure that those are kind of top of mind as well. Scrolling down a little further, we've got our events section and our news section. And these will link to our event calendar and our news center where there'll be press releases and other information sheets. And below this, we've got two samples of different content blocks. So these are, again, customizable for us. We are able to take them away when we don't need them or add them back in as necessary. Again, did something really important pop up. Below, we've got a social media section. We're still looking on ways to incorporate our social media into our site. And maybe it might just be end up being a simple list of buttons in the footer. And this is our footer. So again, it's got the important information, addresses, operating hours, different important pages and some policies. But again, the cool thing is the majority of our homepage is accessible or excuse me, is customizable. So, you know, we are in control and able to change at a moment's notice whenever we need to. And now I want to toggle back and remind you again of our current site. Menus on our current site. So if you take a quick look at the top, we've got two menu sections with 12 menu options to select from. That's a lot of choices for somebody to make when they get to our website. I want to show you that we have now pared down and our new site actually has 7 menu sections across the top. I'm going to go back real fast and go through those. But it's got about, departments, customer care, community, save water and money, your water, and connect. And while I'm at the top up here, I do also want to show you another thing for accessibility is we have a couple buttons up here. There's an A with a minus, a regular A, and an A plus. And what those will do is they will change the size of your font. And so What I've learned is as I get older, I definitely need to make it more than 100%. So I probably click on that A plus so I can have an easier time seeing things. But the A in the middle will allow you to kind of reset it back to where it should be. So that's a really cool feature. I really like that. And then additionally, we are able to translate our entire website into other languages. And currently, we just have a handful of them, but we did speak with the developer and we decided that all of the languages that are included on our annual CCR notification, I believe there's about 9 or 10 of them. We're going to add those as well to this list so that, again, we know that those are languages that are spoken within our service area. And again, we want to make it so that other people can access the information like anybody else. Okay, so moving forward on our navigation. So how are people going to find the content? Again, one of the website best practices that we go by is called a 3-click max. So basically, you get 3 clicks, you know, to get to what you are actually looking for. And if any further than that, people get frustrated and they leave. They don't find what they need, and then they're upset. So what we did for that is a mega menu. And so a mega menu allows you to click on the big section itself. And so under our about section, we've got our governance, who we are, our employment opportunities, departments. Again, this is a new section for us, but it's, you know, being able to group things, you know, under human resources. I know there's a lot of information there, but making that very obvious. Again, you know, our board of directors and our administrative services. As I mentioned, public record request. This is one of the places that we have it listed. With our customer care section, again, we've also, in addition to anything you could possibly need for your bill, we're giving them information about emergency preparedness and scam alerts. And then our community. This is everything that is facing or interfacing with the community. So our gardening classes, our school programs, speakers bureaus, our events. And I'm going to take a quick stop and I'm going to show you what an internal page looks like. So this is the landing page for our community section. And so, again, you know, we're working on having nice images, vibrant images. And so we've got a nice little intro paragraph. But again, this is another way to show areas within this section. And so people can click here and then go to the information that they need. And also, I do want to show one of the cool things, too, is that in addition to having the information at the top, we also have them underneath. And so if there's a little plus next to it, you can click on it and the menu will expand for the pages that are under that section. So again, just trying to make the navigation a lot easier for people to be able to see and get around. Because I know even for me, and I work on our website all the time, our current site gets kind of tricky and you can get lost pretty quickly and not find your way back home. So moving on with our Save Water and Money, again, you know, focused on our rebates and our conservation requirements. What we have done here is expanded upon the resources. So not only is there conservation tips, we've got more things for irrigation help and for plants and different things for your landscape. Because I, you know, we sit next to conservation. I hear them all the time talking with customers about you know, different resources and pointing them towards things. And they point people towards our website all the time. Moving on to the next one, our your water. Again, this has everything from all of our water resources to water quality, our planning efforts. And I hope this one might check the box for a couple people is the plans and reports. I know that there are at least a handful of people I know that ask me, hey, where's this on the site? You know, I need this plan. I need this report. I don't know where it is. And so this is a section where you're going to come and you're going to get linked pretty much directly to each report that's finalized. So, or the landing page that it lives on in case you wanted to get more information. So I know that that's an important section. Again, usually for people looking, you know where they're going and looking really deeply for that information. Moving on to our Connect. Again, we have contact us, so we're trying to get people connected with our customer care work group, and again, instructing them on water-related emergencies. You know, this is not the place to put it in a form and pray the water stops running. You know, you have to, we're connecting them to customer care so that they can pick up the phone and make the phone call. Again, we've got our public records request in here, as well as utility drawings, and then different ways to connect with us. You can hopefully apply for a job and work with us, or you can do business with us by being a consultant or a contractor. So let me see, I think that might be the end of my tour, but I'm going to leave up our community page and just talk through a couple other considerations. So the first one being website best practices. So we're going to continue to follow those best practices in terms of transparency, accessibility, and design to provide our customers with the best possible online experience. Second thing, I know transparency is super important, and it's definitely a priority for our agency. And so what we did ahead of time is we took the CSDA transparency certificate application, and I went through every possible thing that could be on the website, and I checked the box to make sure that those were actual items that we had on our website. And lastly is accessibility. So we specifically chose to work with 360 Civic as our web developer because they said that they would provide us with an ADA compliant website. Additionally, we're following website content accessibility guidelines for everything we do. And typically, you know, some of those best practices are part of those guidelines for accessibility. And then a couple next steps in terms of accessibility for the website is that we need to start training staff on creating accessible documents. So by the time they get to the website, they're going to be compliant with accessibility guidelines when they're posted. So we kind of have to start the process on the right foot. And then the second part of that is that we're going to start focusing on remediating our current PDFs so that they're also accessible. So I know right now, you know, we're doing the best we can. You know, we've got, you can scan through PDFs, you can search them, but we're going to start working on trying to make those accessible as well. And again, it actually minimizes our liability and our risk for accessibility lawsuits. So that's a big thing. Because I've heard from other people that it happens and it's coming and it's just a matter of time. So that's some next steps for accessibility. And the next steps in general, as they were outlined in your committee report, currently our department ambassadors are reviewing the website, and then we're going to open it up to all SCV Water staff and directors to take a look through our website. Because I probably am blind to any typos or errors, and I could always use a fresh set of eyes to help me. And then we're going to do some staff training for those admins who are going to work on doing the admin side of the site. So the people who do board and committee packets. And then we're going to look for that soft launch in December with that hopefully awesome, exciting launch January 1 of 2023 on the fifth anniversary of SCV Water. So I can't wait for our fifth year anniversary. So with that, that's the end of my presentation. I'm going to stop sharing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Any questions from the public? Directors? Director Panic.
Thank you. What a marvelous thing you're doing. It's quite incredible. I think I might have missed, or maybe I got it mixed up with your accessibility, which now I understand better what you were talking about with that, about how long you're keeping documents on there.
Our best practice is to keep the current year plus two additional years. So that means you'll have two full years plus, you know, you'll start in January and then build up to have a full 3 years on there.
Yeah, because I find it really helpful to be able to research board meetings, past board meetings. So I would be sorry to lose that. And I don't think it's a matter of, it's not I mean, right now you just go to an archive and there they all are. And I don't think it's an issue really of cluttering up things, because it's, you know, it's just a matter of data storage. And I just wish that we would continue to keep the board meetings up. And then the other thing, the document library, I use that quite a bit too, but I have trouble using it because sometimes I don't know whether the documents are titled in an odd manner. And some of the older documents don't seem to be there. Like people kept saying, look at the 2013 facilities capacity report. Well, I can't find it anymore. So, but it's around someplace. Somebody has it. And the last thing that I think is really important is to make sure that you have a place up there like you do on your current website that's for the current meeting packet where people can just click. I don't know. I didn't see that on the first page.
It's in the
bottom. Oh, yeah.
Well, they have it down in the events.
It's one of those four quick links as next board meeting, the ones at the top.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't see them very well.
And I apologize too. So to address the document library, the plan is to have a much better search function on this website than our current website. I've found myself frustrated by our search function on our current website. So the plan is to make sure that this one works and truly returns good search results.
And I'm so excited about the different languages. That's really great. I don't know if people will see up there that they can get all those different languages. I don't know how to do that, because if you don't speak English to begin with, will they be able to see that button that says other languages? Or maybe there's, I don't know what you could do about that. Maybe title it with other languages or something.
Sure, that's something we could definitely look into updating.
Okay, Dr. Kellum.
Great job, great website, great presentation. But she's writing down the word "but." We're sending a message that we're in a drought, and I've also been driving the freeways through Agora Hills and all the way up to Oxnard, and I don't see very many green mountains. And so I'm really wondering why we're presenting a drought situation with green mountains instead of the reality of brown mountains.
Well, you're in luck. That's something that's easily customizable. We can definitely look to a more appropriate image for the header. And that does make sense.
I do that every once in a while.
Any other questions? Well, thank you for the presentation. Just one quick question regarding the financial considerations. We're on budget, is that right? Or within budget?
Correct, yes.
And for how long do we retain our vendor that does this website for us?
They, I believe, have a one-year maintenance contract with us as soon as we go live.
Okay, so a whole year then.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
One additional question.
Dr. Brunson.
Okay. Well, I had the same thought as Director Kelly had about the Green Hills. I was like, ooh, not a good look. There's beautiful, more barren looks that we could put up there that would probably represent us better. I love the mood board. I love the consideration that we have for everyone, basically. It's really great. My question was, how correctly are these languages translated? Is it just kind of like a Google Translate kind of thing? The website?
To my knowledge, I don't believe it is. I believe that they, Kathy, can you remind me? I, I think it's definitely more than Google Translate. I know that.
Yeah, it was on Google, but I'm forgetting what the tool was. But it's not a word for word like some native speaker went and did that. But it is a step above Google. And from what they explained to us too is somebody who doesn't speak English and they're on a site that they know that little drop-down thing is a best practice. Like I could go to a French site and know that, oh, that box, I could probably drop that down and there's going to be my name, you know, is going to say English in there or even English spelled in French. So somebody that's coming to our site is going to have that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's like just a symbol of like the world or something that, you know, kind of like a little symbol.
Like an
that,
icon thing.
So that people can identify that this is, you know, something else. Because if you, like, if I don't speak French, I might not identify the word French on the top to know to click on it to put it down because, or Italian, you know, like, I mean, there's educated guesses too when you go to websites. I get that. And then the search button, I noticed there were two different searches. Is that purposeful? Are we keeping two search things? Do we need two different search things? Do they serve different purposes?
So they serve the same purpose. Again, trying to be more customer focused and customer forward. Instead of telling them, hey, this is what we think you need to know, it's, you know, again, trying to invite them into engaging with our site and how can we help you? That search function is only on the homepage. So when you get into the other pages of the website, that will not be there, but the one at the very top will always be there. So yes, it might seem a little redundant on the homepage, but once you get deeper into the website, it's not.
That way they don't have to go back home to search.
And the search is better than the current search, right? Because the current search isn't very good.
Correct.
Okay, awesome. Do you know what? Never mind. I'm good. It's great. It's wonderful. It's lovely. Not getting into the nitty gritties. Good. It looks great. Thank you.
As Lindsay mentioned, at that next, there's a time coming in the near future where we'll send a link out to all employees and directors where you can sit at home and start clicking to your heart's content and make notes and send it back to us. And that'll be your opportunity for those new greeting too. Mm-hmm. It's still the window is not closed.
I'm trying to stay out of that.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. Yeah, the design, you look and feel, you know, you're not going to satisfy everybody, but you guys have done a good job.
Thank you very much.
One last question. You said that staff will have to make documents accessible so that they can post it onto the website. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I've sat through a couple of trainings. So basically, so not everybody can see our website, but some people can hear our website. And so they have screen readers that can read through the website. Similarly, they could open a document and listen to the document. And so what it is being able to set up the document so that it reads itself in order. And so, you know, thinking of being a document creator, okay, well, I like this order. Okay, no, I need to reorder this. And so sometimes when you reorder things in a Word document, when you go to convert it to a PDF, it picks up little formatting things and it may say paragraph one is up here and then paragraph two is like on the third page. And so if you cannot read it in the order that, you know, it was intended, but you're listening to it, that, you know, you get the first paragraph and then you get another paragraph out of context. And so as it reads to you, it's not in the right order. So things that kind of fix that are making sure you have like the right, you have to actually have a header for your section. You have to have the body body text, body paragraph for your section, you know, the appropriate headers and footers. And, you know, I think a lot of the time, and I'm guilty too of doing it, is, okay, well, I want to make a header for my section. I'm just going to bold this text or put it in all caps, and then that's going to suffice for it. So there's more nuanced stuff than, you know, just being able to see a document and being able to see it and read it. So we have to think of other people who might not be able to see the document, but instead are having the document read to them. And so if it's out of order, it can be very confusing. Does that kind of make sense?
Right. But the document is still written in Microsoft Word.
Correct. And so it's when you start in Microsoft Word that you are using the right header, the right body text, and it flows in the right order. And then when you convert it to that PDF, it should have that flow in the right order. The nice thing about Adobe is they do have an accessibility wizard. It's kind of like a little checker that you can put on the document, and it will tell you, you know, like, oh, I think there's an error here, or, you know, ways to fix it, to remediate it. So as you can see, currently, if you think about what's on our website right now, any documents like that, I highly doubt anybody has thought to put the right header, the right body text, the right order. And so the potential is out there. Again, it could be a liability that, you know, for somebody looking for things to be accessible, that might not fit the bill. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. And what kind of learning curve are we anticipate from our staff? Are we going to have some training sessions? Will you be leading those training sessions, Gibson? Or
so I am not the expert. I know enough because I've just tried to learn more as I go. So Site Improve, that's the cool thing about Site Improve, is that they also, in addition to tracking our website and telling us, you know, there's a typo here, this link's broken here, is that they also have a Site Improve Academy. And so, again, we are able to sign up our staff for training through them, and they will teach accessibility. They will teach how to create accessible documents. So there are training courses on that. So that's part of the next steps. I'm excited because, you know, I want to learn it too. And, you know, this is one piece of accessibility and just the whole accessibility culture. So I'm excited to be able to bring that to our website and to our agency as well.
And if I could add one thing, one place that starts is just templates. Like, we have agenda memo templates and press release templates that date back years and years. And sometimes I'll open something, it's Word 2003, and you just keep opening it, deleting, and filling in. So what we want to do is have someone develop, here's your new agenda memo template. So it won't necessarily look different, but it's like the bones of it are in the correct way, so that now when you start, you're filling that in, that underlying framework is already there and correct.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Okay, with no further questions, comments, let's move to item 7. And like I've mentioned before, pardon?
No,
I said,
thank you.
As I mentioned before, Ms. Martin, if you can present 7.1, 7.2, 7.3, 7.4 in that order for the sake of time.
Yeah, there's actually not much new on these from the last time. Those are just our ongoing monthly tracking. I think the only thing that we added new is the events on the sponsorship tracking, including links to those event pages that was asked for, but nothing else of note.
Understood. Any public comments? Directors, questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Ms. Martin. Leads to item number 8, adjournment. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you, staff. Thank you, directors. I know this is a long, but very productive conversation.